You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, everybody, welcome to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation. 60 minutes of live news, talk, and information by, for, and about the cannabis community. Thanks for joining us here. We want to thank all of our new viewers. We are just exploding in watchers all over the Stick'em stream that we've got going up at live.normal.org. We're here every weekday, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time to get your latest news by, for, and about the cannabis community. And part of that community is my co-host and my special friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hey, Russ. Congratulations, Radical Russ, on getting on the front page of Huffington Post.
Ooh,
unbelievable.
Yes, I got a piece up on the Huffington Post. We'll be talking about that today. At the bottom of the hour, about 1:45, we'll be speaking to Douglas Hyatt. He's an attorney in Seattle, Washington, who defended Tim Guerin, among other people, who was a legal medical marijuana patient who was kicked off the liver transplant list because of his medical marijuana use, and of course, he did pass away. So we are going to be talking about that tragedy. We'll also be joined by Paul Armentano at 1:30. He's Normal's deputy director, and he's going to talk about the latest studies on cannabis and cancer. You'll want to stay tuned for that. We've also got Daily Toker Tunes at 20 after the hour. Today is Roots Monday, and Carrie will be bringing us some music for today. And of course, the headlines right after this segment. But before we get into all of that, I got to talk just a little bit about yesterday's day on the television. That's right, football games, the conference championships. It was a beautiful day to behold in many, many ways, but we do have to offer sincere condolences to Carrie and her Jets, 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 Jets. I'm so sorry, Carrie.
No, I'm very proud. What a fantastic season those guys have, and we're looking forward to next year.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, a certain number 4 who plays for the Minnesota Vikings managed to lose his game to the New Orleans Saints. And, of course, we don't want to – we here at Normal Show Live don't want to take too much time on this, being it's not a football show or anything. But I thought it was kind of interesting how Brett Favre, once again in a conference championship game, managed to lose a winnable game by throwing a ill-advised interception in a game that went to overtime. But hey, Vikings fans, at least he didn't do it at your home. All right, that's enough of that. We're having some fun here at Normal Show Live, and when we come back right after the break here, we are going to be getting our daily hemp headlines from Cannabis Carrie. Lots of stuff to talk about, including some controversy at law enforcement against prohibition. Stick around. This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to...
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The Alaskan Court of Appeals has shot down a couple's religious defense to marijuana possession charges. Michael Linker, 64, and his wife were arrested back in 2003 after police found cannabis plants hidden in a secret room in their house. According to the police reports, the arresting officers didn't find any paraphernalia related to smoking, ingesting, or selling the cannabis, just the plants themselves. The couple claimed they used cannabis oil in their religious practices to cleanse and anoint themselves. Lineker said that the plants had to be grown in a very specific way, and then a hand juicer was used to extract liquid out of the mature plants and mixed with olive oil. His wife said the process was messy but spiritually fulfilling. Freedom of religion is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and the UNO courts concluded that the couple had just made up their beliefs. The lower court also said there's no credible recognition of some force of power beyond the personal that is themselves. An appeals court decision backed the lower courts, concluding, adding, in Alaska, some people's spiritual solace may be to go into the wilderness and commune with nature. Smoking a little dope or absorbing it through the skin may or may not turn it into a more pleasurable experience, but it does not turn it into a religious experience. They pleaded no contest, he to fourth-degree misconduct with a controlled substance, and she to fourth-degree attempted misconduct. The couple does have the option of taking their case to the Alaskan Supreme Court.
Well, you know, something I've always told people is that if you want to claim a religious use defense for your use of marijuana, your reward will be a nice jail cell where you can study your holy book for a long time. Now, that's not to say there is not legitimate religious use of marijuana. There absolutely is. And furthermore, I don't even really think you need a religious use defense to use marijuana. As far as I'm concerned, if living in a free country means that you can't take a plant that grows out of the ground and puff on it in the privacy of your own home, then this free country ain't worth the Constitution's hemp paper that it was written on. But if you're going to try to take that to court, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work, folks. It's been tried many, many times before by people who could demonstrate a far more serious and credible religious defense than these folks. And the problem is this. People look to this case that described how Indians, these Brazilian, South American Indians, could use ayahuasca, this very potent hallucinogen, or how some Native American tribes have the right to use peyote, the hallucinogenic cactus in their religious ceremonies. This has been decided by the courts because they come up with this test, a two-prong test, as to whether or not the religious use of that item substantially interferes with the government's mission to keep drugs illegal for most people's use. In the case of the ayahuasca or the peyote, the court reasons there are so few people that use those, and it's so easy to demonstrate that they are sincere religious users of those things, that it really doesn't stop the government from stopping other people from using ayahuasca or peyote. In the case of cannabis, it's exactly the opposite. The minute that the courts decide that there's a religious use to cannabis, suddenly there will be 22 million religious users of cannabis, all claiming they believe in a certain religion that allows them that use. And that would substantially burden the government from being able to keep marijuana illegal for all people. I'm not saying it's right, people. I think it's blatantly wrong, and it's a terrible interpretation of our constitutional rights to deny us the ability or the right to use cannabis any way we see fit. I'm just telling you the way it goes down in the courts. Don't go out there buying on the internet some religious defense card that's going to keep you out of jail, because guess what? It's not.
The Associated Press is reporting that Mexican musicians could face jail time if they write or perform songs glorifying drug trafficking. In the latest hysterical move by Mexico's ruling party, the National Action Party, proposed legislation would mean sentences of up to 3 years for offenders. The target of the proposed legislation are ballads known as narcocorridos that often describe drug trafficking and violence and are popular among Norteño bands, the northern music of Mexico that has given rise to the Tijuana music. Oscar Martin Aker, a National Action Party MP, told the Associated Press that his party's proposal was presented to Congress on Wednesday and was also intended to target low-budget films praising drug lords. He added that the proposal's intention was not to limit free expression, but to stop such performances from inciting crimes, claiming one alleged murderer had told police he became involved in crime because he liked the music. It remains unclear when the legislation will be voted on, but it seems if the Mexican authorities are unable to rid their citizens of controlled substances, it seems unlikely that they would be able to control the songs an artist would write.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Ya no puede caminar.
You're listening to
porque
Normal Show Live.
Porque le falta marihuana que fumar.
Yeah, it's the music.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
That's what we do. If we're going to stop the deaths and the violence and the corruption from the drug war in Mexico, by God, arrest a few Mexican musicians. That'll take care of it. Yeah, that'll solve the problem. Oh, my God. Well, don't these people ever learn that art and artists reflect reality, right? If the reality is that the only people in Mexico who can have the Mexican dream of having, I don't know, tons of money and freedom and status and power are the ones who are involved in illegal drugs, then that's what the musicians are going to sing about, okay? They sing about their reality. They sing about what it is. Art reflects life. It doesn't go the other way around here. No matter what, if one guy heard a song and decided he wanted to join the bad guys, come on here. This is the stupidest thing I've heard since we go back to George H.W. Bush, excuse me, going after Ice-T for Cop Killer. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now.
And in a compelling story that is playing out on the New Hampshire activist website, freekeen.com, we have an update on the story of recently reactivated police officer Bradley Jardis. Jardis was targeted by his superiors, allegedly because of his involvement with LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Jardis was disciplined last October and more recently had passed a recommended psychological evaluation that cleared him to return to work. On the eve of returning, Officer Jardis wrote a courageous and controversial statement and posted it on the Free Keen website. In it, he vowed to never arrest another sick individual for the use of medical marijuana. In response, LEAP's director Jack Cole has asked Jardis to leave the organization, or at least to immediately stop referring to himself as a member of the cannabis activist group. He lists his reason in a letter to Officer Jardis stating, "It has come to LEAP's attention that you have chosen to violate the oath you took on joining the police department to enforce all the laws of the federal and state governments in which your police department has jurisdiction. And worse, you are calling on other law enforcement officials to violate their oaths of office." Now, the Post has received dozens of comments on this case, and most of are in support of Officer Brad Jardis. I just wanted to remind people that he has been a New Hampshire police officer for over a decade.
This is a tough story to have to report because I can see the points on both sides here. Officer Jardis is clear in his belief that the New Hampshire Constitution forbids him from arresting people for the medical use of marijuana. And in stating that he's not going to do that anymore, he believes that he is obeying his oath as an officer to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution of both the United States and of the state of New Hampshire. On the other hand, I can see the point that the people at LEAP are making, that they want to make inroads into the law enforcement community, and the law enforcement community is, you know, by and large, dedicated to the notion that we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. And no matter how bad the law is, they feel it's their job to enforce it. And if officers were just to go around saying, don't enforce this law, don't enforce that law, there could be chaos. So I can understand both points. But I got to come down to this, and it's the notion of an officer's discretion. Officers have the discretion as they're out in the field to enforce laws as it would seem reasonable in their day-to-day patrols. For example, they don't go and give litter citations to every single bum standing on the corner flicking cigarette butts into the gutter. I wish they would, but that's not what happens, because obviously it's not an effective use of their time to be doing so. Neither do they arrest every jaywalker they see, you know, not all the time. They sometimes they have the time not to do that. And even in the cases of marijuana possession, many people can talk about how some police officers have used their discretion in the past to just confiscate the contraband and send the offender on their way. This would also go toward cities in the United States that have put together lowest priority enforcement initiatives, places in Missouri and Montana, Missoula, Montana, Seattle, Washington, and so on, that have these citizen passed initiatives that say it should be the lowest law enforcement priority of officers to do any sort of marijuana arrests, in that they're saying there's more important things to do, right? You got more crimes to solve than to worry about a bunch of people smoking weed. And, of course, there's the 14 states now that have the medical marijuana protections, and this is what Officer Jardis is speaking of. Of course, New Hampshire is not a state that has medical marijuana protections, but it tried, and it did make it through the legislature, and it was highly popular with the people of New Hampshire, only to be vetoed by one person, the governor. Right? So there's only one person really in New Hampshire here who has any power to do anything about it that is against medical marijuana. The people overwhelmingly support it. The comments I'm finding at normal.org and stash.normal.org, our blog here for the show, seem to be overwhelmingly in favor of Officer Jardis. It's a tough place for LEAP to have to come out to, but I understand why they do it, but I'm with Officer Jardis on this one.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to check out our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. And I want to give everyone a chance to check that out up on the web and all the other amazing things we've got going on at Normal. You can find the latest in news and headlines that we cover here on the show. And the calendar, which is I'm really happy about. This is the local Normal chapters all throughout the country who put together their events on this shared Google calendar. It appears up at normal.org/calendar so that we can all get the same events and know what is happening at the grassroots level all around this great country of ours. And as soon as that appears here on my computer's web, I will be able to read a few of these events to you. Pardon me for not having this loaded up in advance, but sometimes we fly by the seat of our pants here at Normal Show Live. We are a primarily a volunteer organization based out of Washington, D.C. I'm one of the few paid staffers here working many, many days a week, 6 days a week, and use about 12 hours a day trying to help overturn adult marijuana prohibition. Please get involved. Join Normal at normal.org. Well, unfortunately, I'm afraid that website's just not going to come up fast enough here. So we're just going to take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by Cannabis Carrie again to talk about our Daily Toker Tune. Today is Roots Monday. So we'll be bringing you the best in jazz, blues, country, and folk music for your 420 pleasure out there on the East Coast. We'll be right back.
It's 20 after the hour. We have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
All right, it's 21 after the hour. Time for our tunes. It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. I still haven't gotten around to fixing that pre-recorded intro. The website is cannabisfantastic.com, where you can check out Carrie's latest pieces on the news that she talks about here on the Normal Show Live. Carrie, how's it going, and what do we got for today's music?
Well, Russ, you know that I love cover songs. I'm kind of a cover song junkie. And today we have New Orleans piano legend Henry Butler, and he's been nominated 8 times for the W.C. Handy Best Blues Instrumentalist Piano Award. Now, although blinded by glaucoma since birth, Butler is also a world-class photographer, with his work displayed at exhibitions throughout the United States. Playing piano since the age of 6, Butler is a master of musical diversity, combining percussive jazz piano and the New Orleans style sound. Butler continues to craft a sound that is uniquely his own, a rich amalgam of jazz, Caribbean, classical, pop, blues, and R&B influences. His music is as enticingly eclectic as that of his New Orleans birthplace. In 2005, Butler lost his home and much of its contents to the floods resulting from New Orleans levees failures after Hurricane Katrina. But thankfully, his archive of tapes survived. Today's track is a live performance of Butler's piano jazzed out version of the Otis Redding classic Dock of the Bay, a song that has always had a wonderful toker connection for me. You can visit henrybutler.com to learn more about this jazz man and hear some more of his music. So without much more, here is Henry Butler and Dock of the Bay.
All right, some great toker music from Louisiana in celebration of the Saints. Henry Butler, Dock of the Bay.
Sitting in the morning sun, beach sitting, yeah, till the evening comes. Watching the ship roll in, and I watch them roll away again. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching time roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, lost, nothing to live for. Seems like nothing would have come my way. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching time roll away, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Been the same. How can I do what 10 people tell me to do? So I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, loneliness won't leave me alone. Two thousand miles I roam just to make the stock my home. That's why I'm sitting the dock of the bay, watching the time roll away. Ooh. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Wasting time, oh love. Wasting time, I'm wasting time.
Oh, Oh, yeah. A little Daily Toker Tunes. Henry Butler there. Live performance of Dock of the Bay. Thanks, Cannabis Carrie, for bringing us that tune. We come back, we are going to be joined by Paul Armentano, Normal's Deputy Director, to talk to you a little bit about cannabis and cancer. Stick around. This is Normal Show Live.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a.k.a. NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to NORML at NORML.org and support NORML Show Live.
I want to remind everyone you can get the archives of every NORML Show Live at the Stash blog, stash.normal.org.
For almost 40 years, NORML has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at NORML has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than almost anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, NORML's Paul Armentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Armentano. Paul Armentano joined us by telephone from the Bay Area in California. Paul, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, Russ.
Glad to hear it. We bring you here today to discuss some recent studies. You know, a lot of people talk about cannabis and cancer. On one side, you've got the prohibitionist saying if you smoke a joint, it's like 400 cigarettes, you're going to get lung cancer and die. And on the other side, sometimes on our side, we have people saying, well, you smoke marijuana, you'll never get cancer, you'll live to be 118. So where does the truth lie? What can you tell us about the latest studies on cannabis and cancer?
Well, as I'm sure many of your listeners would expect, the truth falls somewhere in the middle, or if not in the middle, at least quite a bit closer to those that are saying that cannabis has the ability to potentially treat, if not cure, cancer. You know, this idea that the equivalent of one marijuana cigarette is like X number of tobacco cigarettes, or this notion that if you use marijuana, you will be diagnosed later in life with lung cancer, has really been debunked quite consistently. And in fact, the government's top researcher on this issue, Donald Tashkin, who was affiliated with the University of California at Los Angeles, he recently wrote an affidavit for the Assembly Criminal Justice and Health Committee in California documenting that through his 30 years of research on this subject and having published over 89 different papers looking at marijuana in cancer, he's convinced that marijuana smoking is not a significant risk for either COPD or cancers of the lung or aerodigestive tract. So if that's his conclusion, I think that's the conclusion that's good enough for our community as well.
Yeah, and for folks that don't know that, COPD, he mentions, that's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a big lung disease, and marijuana smokers haven't been shown to, just marijuana-only smokers, we should be clear, haven't been shown to have any higher incidence of COPD. One thing that has happened recently with respect to cannabis and cancer happened last year when the California Environmental Protection Agency declared the constituent chemicals in cannabis smoke to be carcinogens. And, of course, the prohibitionists have picked that up and run with it, saying, see, marijuana causes cancer and you shouldn't take it. So what's the real truth on that one?
Well, here's what's going on, and you know, there's really a lot going on. We know that when there is combustion, there is the formation of potentially carcinogenic materials. Whether we're talking about combustion of tobacco, combustion of firewood, combustion of marijuana, you name it. But the risk is the combustion itself and the chemicals that are produced at the point of combustion. So when we're talking about burning smoke and someone inhaling burning smoke, there is a risk of that person inhaling certain carcinogens. So it's not surprising that the California EPA deemed marijuana smoke, not marijuana itself, but the smoke from marijuana to be a potential carcinogen. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of different chemicals on California's carcinogenic list, marijuana smoke literally just being one of hundreds of those. But what we need to talk about is not just the marijuana smoke, but we need to talk about marijuana itself. There are compounds in marijuana that clearly have anti-cancer properties. THC is one of those, and there are several others. Cannabidiol, CBN, CBC. These chemicals have been studied now for over 35 years. They've been isolated and shown to have anti-cancer properties in different lines of cancerous cells and tumors, and they've been used synergistically and shown to have anti-cancer properties in different types of cancer cells and cancer lines. So while there may be some potential carcinogenic risks in the smoke caused by burning marijuana, these risks appear to be offset by the anti-cancer properties in marijuana itself. I should also mention that unlike tobacco smoke, which actually can constrict the airways, the cannabinoids in marijuana are bronchodilators, which means they expand the airways. And that's likely why you don't see this association between marijuana smoke and COPD, an association that you do see with tobacco smoking. So just to clarify, the combustion itself poses the risk, but there's compounds in marijuana that offset that risk. And of course, if somebody wanted to avoid the combustion altogether, they could pursue other alternative ways of ingesting marijuana beyond inhalation. For instance, they could use vaporization, which heats the active components in marijuana to the point where they turn into a vapor, but not to the point where the surrounding material reaches the point of combustion.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director, also called on in courts across the country as an expert witness many times on the science of cannabis and the studies of cannabis. I'm also checking out the chat room here at live.normal.org, picking up people's thoughts on the issue here. I have one chat here from the NorCal Kid who says, we had a patient, apparently in California, bring in edibles with labels that said, warning, the state of California has deemed marijuana to contain carcinogens. So you're saying for edibles, there's no need for that under the law or under the science?
No, in fact, under the law, only the smoke itself is deemed a carcinogen. So an edible product or a tincture would not need to contain this warning label. In fact, under the law, it is only businesses that I believe have 10 or more people, 10 or more employees that may be exposed to the potential to a carcinogen that is on this list. It is only in those instances where that place of employment would need to adhere some sort or post some sort of warning label to give people some perspective. We don't live in California. Alcohol is on the carcinogen list in California. So is aspirin. You do not, when you buy a bottle of alcohol in California, there is no warning label on it specific to the state of California saying this product is carcinogenic. When you buy a bottle of aspirin in the state of California, there's no warning label from the state of California saying this product is carcinogenic. So this belief that dispensaries or other sellers of medical marijuana products would have to impose some sort of warning label that these other products don't, I don't believe is the case at all.
Okay. Got a question here in the chat room from Mike Can, one of our great activists out in Boston, Massachusetts. Does some great work out there with the Boston Freedom Rally and so much more with MassCan Normal. He's got a question here about joints and saying, so because the combustion is the problem, is the paper in a joint also something that could be carcinogenic, and should people stay away from joints for that reason?
There have been some studies looking at inhalation, whether it's from vaporization, whether it's from water pipes, whether it's from pipes, whether it's from joints, and trying to determine which delivery device delivers the maximum amount of cannabinoids while delivering the least amount of potential carcinogens. And what those studies have found, and there's several of them now, is that vaporization tends to be the most efficient and safest way to deliver the maximum volume of cannabinoids while eliminating the majority of carcinogenic smoke. The second most effective way, after vaporization, however, is in fact joints.
Oh.
And this has to do with the fact that water pipes don't eliminate much of the particulates and other contaminants in combustion. It has to do with when a person's using a pipe, they lose many of the cannabinoids are lost in side stream smoke. So if somebody is looking for potentially an effective and safer alternative that isn't vaporization, it appears that joints are the way to go.
Okay, so vaporization first, joints second, and we'll leave it at that, I suppose. Before we let you go, Paul, is there any new breaking studies or information with regard to long-term use of cannabis by people and their likelihood of getting cancer, or anything that we'd want to leave on today?
Well, there was a study, and you mentioned it on in your news report a couple weeks ago, that found that the anti-cancer properties of marijuana work better as a whole as opposed to simply taking different constituents of the marijuana plant and applying them individually to the point of cancer. I thought that was a very interesting study. There was a study published about 3 or 4 months ago that looked at long-term marijuana smoking in humans and looked to assess whether these users of marijuana would have a higher or lower risk of cancers of the head and neck. And what it found was that moderate users of marijuana for about 20 years had a statistically significantly lower risk of having marijuana than people that didn't use marijuana at all. What was especially interesting about that study was they found that individuals who had high risk factors for coming down with cancer of the head and neck, and specifically that was tobacco smoking and alcohol use, if those individuals used marijuana in addition to smoking tobacco and drinking alcohol over a lifetime, they still had an elevated risk of head and neck cancer, but it was far lower than those individuals who only drank alcohol and used tobacco and didn't use marijuana. Mm. So that was a very compelling study showing that there is likely some sort of safety buffer from the long-term use of marijuana, at least as it pertained to head and neck cancer.
Wow, that's some amazing stuff. You can catch all of these studies listed up at normal.org, and Paul has written up many of them on the Normal blog at blog.normal.org. And thanks so much, Paul, for calling in today and dishing out some science for our listeners.
No problem, Russ. Always good to be here.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Douglas Hyatt. He's an attorney in Seattle, Washington, who defended Tim Guerin, a medical marijuana patient who was given a death sentence when he was kicked off the liver transplant list for using medical marijuana. This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. We'll be right back after this.
This is Normal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
I don't care what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't care what you say.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they won't keep no malice.
The healing marijuana.
Welcome back. Normal Show Live, voice of the marijuana nation. It's 47 after the hour, and we're talking about a very important story here in the cannabis community. This is something I'm kind of proud of because I've just broken this story to the mainstream media, at least as mainstream as it gets in the blogosphere. I have a post now up, my first ever post at the Huffington Post, which is a very influential progressive blog started by Arianna Huffington, referenced by the mainstream media all the time. And the title of the post is called "The Denial of Organ Transplants to Medical Marijuana Patients." And I begin by saying medical marijuana activists like to claim that cannabis has never killed anyone. While it is true that cannabis is remarkably non-toxic, the safest therapeutically active substance known to man, according to a DEA judge, medical marijuana use has actually killed many people in the United States. Because in the 14 states that allow medicinal use of cannabis, a registered patient in need of a life-saving organ transplant can be denied, can be kicked off of an organ transplant list for supposedly being a drug abuser, using a illicit drug of abuse. And for people like Tim Guerin of Seattle, that was a death sentence. Joining me by telephone is Douglas Hyatt, a member of the Normal Legal Committee and also the chief petitioner on a new marijuana legalization proposal in the Evergreen State. He defended Tim Guerin and countless other medical marijuana patients. Douglas, welcome to the show.
Great to be here with you, man.
Doug, I filled people in just a little bit on the Tim Guerin story. Could you give folks the background on what happened with Tim?
Well, Tim Guerin was a guy who was a medical marijuana patient, and he had a hepatitis B virus, and he was in line to get a liver transplant because he had a real serious form of hep C. It was very virulent, and it was destroying his liver. And he was looking at the necessity of a transplant. And he had started down that path with a couple of different hospitals up here when I first got involved with him. I got involved with him because he had had a bust. He was growing marijuana for his own use pursuant to Washington law. When the transplant programs found out that he was a medical marijuana patient, they denied him. He was very, very sick by the time we got him to the University of Washington. He was denied initially at Harborview in one program, and we brought him to the University of Washington to try to get him in another. And he would have been the number one patient. He would have gotten the first liver available. He was in that bad of shape. But they told him that he had to go through drug rehab and be clean from marijuana for 6 months before he could qualify for a transplant. And like I said, I threatened to sue them, and I just threw a temper tantrum over that. And then they reconsidered, and after they reconsidered, they came back and said no, they still felt like he needed to go to a 30-day drug, you know, treatment program. And I was in the room with the doctor when he was telling my client this, and I'm like, you know, but he's going to die in 2 or 3 days. You know, this is ridiculous. And, you know, the doctor just sat there and looked at him. And over the next 2 weeks at Bailey Boucher Hospice here in Seattle, you know, I watched him die for no reason.
We're speaking with Douglas Hyatt, a attorney in Seattle, Washington, who defended Tim Guerin, a medical marijuana patient who died because he was not allowed to be on the liver transplant list because of this criminal prohibition on marijuana and the crazy things that happened because of it. But Tim is not your only defendant in this situation.
No, the amazing thing was, and I didn't tell. I mean, I promised Tim when he was alive that I would, you know, look out for his, that when he was still alive that I would look out for his son. Tim did not know, because I didn't tell him, and his son didn't want him to know. But his son, Lennon Guerin, was raided and subject to a full-blown drug raid and everything while Tim was still alive, and was actually charged with a crime as well. They tried to, you know, they just threw the kitchen sink at him. They added all sorts of charges. They tried very, very hard to get Lennon Guerin, Tim's son, in trouble too. We were able to get that case dismissed last year. David Arganian and I, another attorney here, we were able to get it dismissed on search and seizure grounds. But they were actively going after another Hep C liver patient, and they were going after his son. It's pretty sick situation.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing about it, Russ, is there's no science whatsoever to support this. They're basing the whole thing on a idea that marijuana may contain a bacteria called Aspergillus, which can cause fungal. It's actually a fungus, can cause fungus infections and stuff like that. But it's really not a concern. That's a viable one, but and it's just a ridiculous shibboleth. It's not anything scientific true. There's no valid reason. There are people that believe that marijuana actually helps with transplant rejection issues, that it helps chill out the immune system so that it accepts new organs more readily. There are people doing research on that, good scientific research, that can tell you that this is just a very, very unfair thing here.
Yeah, certainly the research that I found, this was in 2009, October of 2009, research at the University of Michigan. They studied 1,489 liver transplant patients. 155 of them were cannabis users. And over a span of 8 years, the researchers concluded, quote, patients who did and did not use marijuana had similar survival rates. Current substance abuse policies do not seem to systematically expose marijuana users to additional risk of mortality. End quote. So the science is in. This does not hurt the chances of someone getting a liver, you know, rejecting it or getting sick. You know, the argument they use with the argument they'll use with alcoholics is they'll say, well, we don't want to give a liver to an alcoholic who's just going to go drink and kill the liver again. That does not apply here.
No, it clearly doesn't. And I mean, cannabis is not a toxic substance, as you know. It's a benign, you know, therapeutic substance. It's quite safe. And it doesn't really have much of an effect upon the liver. And there have been a number of studies that have concluded that marijuana is perfectly safe for transplants. For transplant patients, and there's simply no reason other than a class. There's kind of a class feeling that you get when you're involved in this up close and personal. You're kind of it turns into a class thing. You know, they're worried about how someone in the program looks, or you know, they're worried about, oh, is that person homeless, or you know, they're really very sensitive to what I would consider almost class, political, how does it look type stuff, compared to actual substantive concerns, substantive medical concerns. This ought to be, you know, based on substantive medical concerns and science, and not based on whether doctors do or don't like somebody. You know, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, and my readers are up in arms about this, and I get comment over and over and over again, we need to sue, we need to sue, but really there's no ADA angle, there's no medical marijuana law angle. Explain the difficulties here with the way the law is written in trying to sue over this.
Well, it's real unclear how this whole organ donor system and how it works and everything is very Byzantine. It's hard to find out how you would get review. The only avenue that I've been able to think of is, like, one of the reasons why we moved Tim Guerin to the University of Washington Hospital was we felt that because that was a state-supported hospital, that we might be able eventually to get court review because it's a state-supported hospital, because it's funded with taxpayer dollars. They would need to be able to prove that the system is fair, that it's not discriminatory, that it has objective criteria and stuff like that. So we thought there might be a chance that we might be able to get a lawsuit going there at a public institution. I'm, you know, not sure about that, and I'm still not sure how it's going to work. I've gone to doctor's appointments with a couple of more medical marijuana patients who are seeking liver transplants and have been involved in programs at the U, and a couple of them have turned out to be in better shape and they don't need the transplant. So we haven't had a situation come back up yet where it's appropriate to sue. And so I don't know, exactly where we're going or what the next step is. Like I said, I've got a couple of patients, medical marijuana patients, who may very well need, you know, to access the transplant program, and I'm kind of waiting to see. I'm also, it's very expensive litigation. It's civil litigation where you have to do a lot of depositions and you have to build a lot of a huge record and stuff like that. So it's going to be very expensive litigation, and I really need to get a war chest before we start in on something like that.
Well, I encourage anyone who's interested in donating to that war chest to send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll see that it makes its way to Doug Hyatt for defending these people. This is a travesty of justice. It's insane. And, you know, just to shift gears a little bit, Doug, you know, I always say that medical marijuana is a beautiful thing, but it doesn't go far enough, because as long as cannabis is illegal, we'll always have these problems in between the legal side and the illegal side. So can you tell folks about your initiative in Washington State for legalization?
Well, what we're working on, let me say this, Russ, about that, and I think you're exactly right. We've talked about this issue before, and I think you know exactly where I stand on this. I mean, I've been representing medical marijuana patients for, you know, over 10 years now, 12 years since we've had this law, and it's become crystal clear that there is no way to get medical marijuana to patients, to get it to patients safely. Law enforcement does not believe in the medical marijuana law. They don't want to follow it. They don't respect it. They're looking for every way they can to shoot it down. The only way, it's become crystal clear to me that the only way that people can protect patients and get medicine to patients that need it and protect patients from the black market is to have marijuana legal for all adults. And to that end, what I'm trying to do here in Washington, and we're working on the final language right now. We have a deadline of February 3rd, but we're working on final language right now that basically just removes all the criminal penalties for adult marijuana in Washington State. That would mean possession, that would mean delivery, that would mean sale, that would mean cultivation, that would mean everything. For adults,
all right.
You'd still be illegal to be driving messed up. It would still be illegal for juveniles. It would still be illegal for an adult to deliver to a juvenile or involve a juvenile. But for adults, all penalties would be removed. And to me, that has several advantages. One, first and foremost, it protects medical marijuana patients and it gets medicine to medical marijuana patients, and it guarantees an end, I think, to the black market. Two, it makes absolutely clear that hemp, industrial hemp, is legal in Washington State, and it gives the farmers an argument, initiative-based, that they've never had before vis-a-vis the federal government. Three, it protects recreational weekend tokers or whenever anybody wants to toke it. It basically legitimizes responsible adult use. And four, if you're a drug, ends a drug war person or a drug reform person, it's going to save about $150 million or more a year in ridiculous wasted costs. And so I think that all those things support the initiative.
Yes, exactly. And we want everyone to get involved with that. If you're interested in helping legalize marijuana in the state of Washington, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll be sure to get to that. And Douglas Hyatt, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. We hope to talk to you again sometime.